State.
Elliott, off to the races. Can they catch him? No, they can't. Touchdown.
Samuel cuts it back. Ohio State wins.
Haskins sprinting out, sets up deep. Over the middle. Touchdown, Buckeyes.
Fields has time. Launches downfield. It's Olave. He's got a touchdown. Ohio State.
Hey, y'all. What's up? Welcome back to another QB Draw. I know we missed a week there, but we are back. Thankfully, we didn't miss very eventful games. Ohio State beat Indiana 23-3, and then Youngstown State 35-7. Pretty underwhelming final scores. I've backed off the ledge a little bit. I'm feeling a little bit better about Ohio State, mostly in the sense that I think we just kind of don't know what this team looks like yet in the big games. And while I'm certainly discouraged by some things and some things in specifics over the last 2 weeks, I think there's some good mixed in there. And while I still think only beating an FCS school by 28 points is like insane. And like, to me is going to be worrying until they prove me wrong this season or prove me right. Yeah, that's sort of where I'm at right now. How are, I got Aaron and Jack with me. How are y'all doing?
John, you want to go ahead?
Good.
Yeah. So, do we want to start off with, I know it's not our main topic, but do we just want to start off with the quarterback talk, which has been put to bed? Ohio State has a starting quarterback.
Yeah, let's just get it out of the way.
Yeah, so as I'm sure you're all aware, Kyle McCord has been named the starting quarterback by Ryan Day. As you know, this podcast has been a Devin Brown support show. So if you want to feed us some crow, that's fair. We'll take it in stride, as we always do. I still like Devin Brown. I think he showed some serious flashes in the Youngstown State game, which he did not get the chance to do in the Indiana game, notably. But there were enough times where it just didn't come together, and he missed some pretty easy throws, and maybe didn't see some guys running wide open. That I don't think you can take that into a Notre Dame and especially a Michigan or Penn State and feel good, especially when Kyle McCord, for as much as we've been skeptical, and I still am skeptical of the overall ceiling, he's really looked pretty good. I think, I don't know if this is CJ Stroud we're talking about. I think he can be a very good quarterback for Ohio State, and that's really all they need from that position. He's the starter. I can't imagine anything changing that, barring a disastrous performance against Notre Dame. And I don't see that happening. So that's where we're at. What do you guys think the upshot of all this is? Where are you at with this?
Yeah, I think Kyle McCord, again, it's like Kyle McCord's kind of like a buoy at this point, right? Like, he's just keep his head above water. Like, he maybe lacks the zip that Devin Brown has, but he doesn't really put the ball at risk much, which is a net positive.
Sorry, can I, like, I feel like I have whiplash. The going back to his high school recruitment, Kyle McCord was always like, this guy's a gunslinger. He was competing as a true freshman with CJ Stroud, even, you know, that probably wasn't much of a competition, but it wasn't, I guess, a certainty. Like, it was like, Kyle's a big game hunter. He's, you know, he's the shot taker. And at some point, like, we always think of the older guy as the more risk averse guy, but it's been such a drastic change in how he's talked about. I don't think you can chalk that up to just like, oh, he got older, he gained the reputation of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I think some of that does come down to like the, you know, just the nature of the position battle, right? When you are the heir apparent, or when you're on the throne, right? Like, it's easier to make smarter decisions. It's easier to do things like, again, like Devin Brown, it was put in almost an impossible situation, right? For what he had to do. You have to go out and show out against, let's say, it shitty defenses, mm-hmm. right?
He didn't even get a chance to do it against the less shitty defense. So
yeah, exactly. That was kind of the farce of it all, was like, you know, saying that there's a competition, and then he gets like what, one drive against Indiana, and it didn't go well, right?
Yeah, so, yeah. I brought this up before, I think, on Twitter, but like, I think there's a good chance Kyle McCord is like, they got the result right. Kyle McCord's the starter, but the way they went about it was the dumbest way to do it. Like, if you didn't want to bring it in this season, then just name Kyle as the starter, because that's clearly where their head was at the whole way. But if you wanted to give Devin Brown a chance to win it, you had to do it against Indiana, and they didn't. So it's like they lost out on Kyle reps at Indiana, you know, in both, and having him as time comfortable as QB1. And then they also didn't give Devin Brown a chance to win it. So it's like, again, I think Kyle McCord's the
QB. Is this just the, and maybe we'll kick it to Jack at this point, Jack, like maybe this is a question for you, but like, is this just the future of college football in the portal era, right? Are you going to enter every season with some farcical QB battle just because you don't want, you know, the second option to hit the portal?
No, I don't think so. I mean, the way I saw it, I figured since they hadn't announced a starter yet, you know, up until like a week before the season or whatever, I figured it was Brown's job to lose because, you know, you've got a guy who in Brown missed spring ball, been there a year less, and he's still competing for the job. Well, it turns out, you know, Kyle pulled away after, you know, Brown may have had a couple of missteps, but I don't think that's the case. I think some guys are fine where they are, and I think Devin Brown is one of those examples. Like, I don't – just because he's not starting this year doesn't mean he's just going to walk into the portal. I think, you know, he wanted to go to Ohio State, and Ohio State picked him. Same with McCord, you know, albeit over some other guys. But I think especially in this case, what really makes me mad is, you know, Day saying that we didn't feel comfortable putting Devin in the game when it was like 13-3. I don't know if you watched that game. Indiana could not move the ball if they had Barry Sanders and Tom Brady.
They didn't even want to.
No, they, like, Tom Allen was playing, like, he had money on Indiana and the under, which respect to him, they both hit. But, like, he was running the ball. He was, you know, Ohio State didn't get a ton of pressure, but they made plays that didn't really cause Indiana to, you know, move up the field at all. So even though it was like 13-3, he had two handoffs and a QB power, like, he's fucking Cam Newton. He's not. He's a smaller guy than me. Like, I don't know what we're doing here. Also, he's not as mobile as I thought, but he, like, tries to make athletic plays, if that makes sense. It's like when Burrow runs around in the pocket. It's like, you could do this, but, you know, you're just not, like, fast like Fields or Lamar, where, like, it doesn't look as cool, you know?
Yeah, he's the one fourth and seven play, I think it was. You can say he bailed out of a clean pocket early, which I get, but I think just seeing that he could do something like that was really cool. And you know, I'm definitely not writing him off here as Ohio State's future quarterback. I don't know when that will happen.
Neither am I.
Yeah, but I think we're in a pretty simple and honestly pretty clean place for this all to end, where Kyle's the starter, but Devin is still a guy to look for in the future. And I think that's a pretty fine way to end it. Most of our concern about this team is not about the quarterback, though. It's really about, I'd say, both lines. If we want to hit the O-line first, I think that's probably the way to do it, because I think defensive line's our bigger concern. And this is going to be a quicker episode, so, you know, if you want to hear talk on the secondary, there's other places you can hear that much better than us. But I think the upshot of that is, looks good. Linebackers look good. Receivers look good. Trevion Henderson looks good.
Right.
So we're going to address the problem areas, I think, which are both lines. And we'll start with offensive line. I'll kick it to you two. How are you feeling about the offensive line 2 weeks into the season?
You know, go ahead, Jack.
I don't want to give anyone else credit, especially the root for other teams. So I'm not going to. I just feel like basically since 2019, back when we had a real rushing attack, and I don't know if that was Ryan Day, like, you know, trying to coach for his job and prove he deserved a contract extension. We just had the best back in the nation, whatever it was. That offensive line was a ton. They were road graders, man. They were meat grinders. They pushed you into the dirt. Like, there's a reason that team was so balanced and Fields didn't throw for, you know, 400 yards a game. But since then, the thing about Ohio State's offensive line is they've been really good at pass blocking. And I think that's the case more so this year than I would have wanted it to be. Ideally, you know, you have a great pass blocking and run blocking line. Josh Simmons, I don't know. He's got to figure something out. I think there are guys waiting in the wings that could potentially be better, although I'm not sure left tackle is one of those positions where they're going to give a guy some run. I think the center through the right side has been better. Donovan Jackson, you know, still maybe living off his high school hype a little bit, but even if Day's not doing them any favors with the run calls, they still can't block shit. Like, you have three running plays and you don't know how to block them. Like, there's no, you're not telling me the Youngstown State is in such a, like, exotic front that you don't know how to block it. You run outside stretch, you run inside zone, and you run, I don't know, really, that's it. Like, if there's going to be so little variation in the run game, I would hope that those three run plays are blocked well. But, alas, yeah, they're not. So,
well, and that's kind of what I'm wondering is I'm hoping maybe there's a wrinkle there, right? Like, maybe is there something that, and they've never shown it before, but like some kind of counter, some kind of something that, like, you know, right, again, dude, get two backs, try anything fucking else, right? Like, you know, Florida State did it a few, like in the LSU game, they come out and they ran one run play the whole first half. And then all of a sudden they get some counters going in the second half, you get two backs, right, in the backfield, and all of a sudden things look different. Like, and the question just becomes of like, do they even want to, like, I guess that's probably my biggest concern with Ryan Day, and more so like, you know, making Brian Hartline the defensive or the offensive coordinator. Like, is he going to be really concerned with the run game, right? Like, he wants his guys, you know, as a positional coach, he wants his guys to eat, and, you know, to his defense too, like, he does a pretty good job of it, right? Like, you've gotten, you know, two really good wide receivers out there, but again, like, would love to see some variation in the run game moving forward. I don't know if we'll get it, but again, like,
we won't.
If we're going to get it, like, I'm glad we don't have it on tape, right? Like, who knows?
Yeah, and it's because Ryan Day just, like, he has to be the smartest in the room. Oh, they won't expect this play for the 37th time in 3 weeks. Yes, they will.
Yeah.
That's all you run. That's all you put on film.
Yeah,
like, if there ever was a time.
Yeah, the stretch of the boundary thing has become a meme, and rightfully so. Like, there's just no reason to run it as much as they do. It's not like the counter play from 2014 where no one could stop it. So, of course, you run it over and over again.
I miss that, dude.
Like, okay. I want to, like, Ryan Day, it doesn't make any sense, because when he has plays that work every single time, he doesn't go back to them. Like, even going as far back as the mesh concepts in 2018, and I get most teams don't play straight man-to-man anymore like Don Brown did, so that might not be the most relevant example. But just in general, like, a sort of a fundamental truism of football coaching is you run the play till they stop it. Ryan Day runs it, they don't stop it, he doesn't run it again, and then he runs it, they stop it, he keeps running it. It's like he has something to prove. It's like
something to prove. Yeah,
it's like the reverse of what you're supposed to do. And it doesn't make really much sense at all. Do y'all have anything more to say on that before we get to the defensive line, which I think...
Let's jump in the defensive line. Like, I think, like, first of all, any conversation about defense, we have to caveat by saying they've let up, what, 10 points?
10 points in 2 games. 10 points. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, so, like, asterisk, whatever, like, it's impressive.
It used to be worse. It used to be worse. Like, against shitty teams for some years there, shitty teams were scoring, like, it was going out of style, so... It might not, who knows how much this will translate to big games, and I think that's a part of what we're about to talk about. But the fact that these last 2 years, Jim Knowles has not yielded much to shitty teams is in and of itself an improvement to the Kerry Combs and the end of the, Greg Schiano era.
Yeah. No, definitely. But the defensive line has been an issue, right? Like, not like 3 sacks through 2 games against 2 really shitty opponents, one of which coming from Tommy Eichenberg, right? Like, you know,
and he's a really good blitzer, but
he can't.
But that can't be your whole pass rush,
exactly,
right?
Yeah, like, yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah. So Mike Hall and Hiro Kanu have 1 sack each, according to
Mike Hall reference. Has been the team's best pass rusher so far, and he is an interior defensive lineman. And
I think I don't want to frame it as if, like, I don't want to make that sound bad, even though it does, like, you know, the ends are getting pressure. It's always a treat, an absolute treat to have that presence up the middle. Yeah. But you need something on the outside, you know?
Yeah.
Well, and think about just the contrast of Bosa becoming the highest paid player, defensive player in the history of the NFL. Pair that with Ohio State can't get a single bit of pressure off from the end with two 5-star defensive ends, by the way.
Yeah.
And like
top 10 nationally.
Yeah, I'll just get into that. I posted a clip on the there's multiple issues here. The one is we think they're playing the wrong personnel package, and we think it's related to Larry Johnson probably being stuck in his ways. And the other issue is some of that personnel is just not performing. I posted a clip, and I don't take credit for like discovering like this. It was the talk of the town during the game. Jack Sawyer's get off is like insanely slow. And it's absolutely befuddling to see because Larry Johnson has sort of been the king of defensive end get off. If you go watch the clip, it is a good half. He is getting off the ball a good half tick behind everyone else. And the clip I posted, he destroys the tackle, but he's late, so it doesn't, like, he's late getting off.
Imagine what you could do if you were on damn time.
Yeah,
right?
It's just really frustrating to watch. And then I think the other element of this is they're kind of playing like, they're kind of doing what they did on the 2021 offensive line with all tackles. Defensive. They're kind of playing all defensive tackles. I'm of the staunch opinion JT Tuimoloau is a 3-tech. He was in high school. All the recruiting sites thought hit of him as an interior guy, but he wanted to play end, and credit him, who doesn't want to play end. But he's going to be so much better as a defensive tackle, as an interior guy, at the very least a strong side guy in like a 3-3 defense. And guess what? I guarantee you whatever NFL team drafts him is going to be like, buddy, you're playing.
Kick him inside.
Yeah. Like,
yeah, you're playing defensive tackle.
Yeah.
It's like the reverse Draymond Jones. Like, he was a great D tackle, but the NFL, you could kick him out a little bit because he was slender and quick. Mm-hmm. I mean, imagine he's inside with Mike Hall and then Tyreek Williams is able to spell one of them. Like, one's the nose guard and one's in the A gap. Yeah, good luck. Meanwhile, you got.
Yeah.
I mean, they're both fat, but fat ass and fatter ass outside.
Yeah, Jack, you said this before the show. It's like the reverse of the Rushman. Like, it's like getting none of your.
It is the fat boys.
Yeah,
which is fine.
But it's not. Yeah, it's not going to. You need the fat boys, but it's not going to generate.
Yeah, again, like I feel fine about that in run defense, right? Like, hey, those are tough bodies to move, but at the same
time, and they're doing their job there. Like, they're doing their job there. So that's all good. But and Jim Knowles is sort of the blitz man, but we've seen time and again that like one of the most important factors in big time college football in the end of the season and the postseason is getting pressure with four guys. And with the personnel they're throwing out there right now, that just isn't going to happen. I mean, it's not happening against Youngstown State. You think it's going to happen against Georgia? Like, So I think sort of, obviously we're not football coaches, but, you know, welcome to our little clinic. Please tune in, Mr. probably Larry Johnson. I'm guessing I think everyone's senses is that what we're about to say is what Knowles wants to do. And that is play three defensive linemen with a jack. And those jacks are either going to be, I think the guys they have playing it now are Caden Curry, who flashes every time he's on the field. CJ Hicks, who you're not going to convince me he wouldn't be a great stand-up edge guy until I see it, and he's not. Like, I just feel like he's probably born for that. And Mitchell Melton, who of course is always injured, but has looked pretty good this season. So
I've got a question for you. If you're talking about three linemen and a jack, I would assume it's two tackles and end in the jack. How would you, what's your personnel there? Because personally, I'm thinking Mike Hall, JTT inside, Hicks at the jack, and Curry outside. But
I think you get a little slight, too slight if you're going Curry and Hicks on opposite sides. I'd say, and obviously this comes all with rotation. Like, I know sort of the rotation on the D-line became a thing people railed against, but I think you have to, because, like, those guys get gassed. I would go, honestly, I'd probably start Curry there, like, in the most important snaps of the game. I'd have Curry at the jack. I just like what I've seen from him so far. If it were up to me, I'd have Hall and Tui Maloau. I think I just butchered his name. I feel like I got no rhythm of saying it right, and then get out of it. But yeah, I'd have JT and Hall in the middle, or, you know, you can go Hall, Tyleek, even Jaden McKenzie has been pretty good, I think.
Have we seen Tyrone Malone?
Not enough. But that's, you can kind of mix and match there. And then on the edge, maybe I'm dumb for not giving up on Jack Sawyer, but, like, I feel like his issues have to be correctable. They seem like the most obvious issues in the world. So yeah, he might stink. He might stink. I hope he doesn't. But, like, I don't think you could totally bench him, especially if they were really liking what they saw in camp. And then you have Kenyatta Jackson out there. So it's like, so in the highest pressure points of the game, like, the rotation's done, you just have your best four out there. I'd probably go, I'm going to say Jack for now, just because we haven't seen Kenyatta at all, but that's a massive asterisk. And then we go JT and Hall, and then Curry. And those would be my four as of right now. So yeah, that's where I'm at with that.
Yeah. I don't know how you could keep Curry and Jackson really off the field at this point. Like, there should be more rotation.
Curry
there.
Especially. I mean, he just looks good when
every time he's on the field, he does something. And, you know, again, like, it's weird to not see him out there more. You know, just looking at it from a size perspective, maybe CJ Hicks is a little slim right now to be, you know, pass rushing, but, like,
he can do it on third down. He can, like
it's speed. Who cares? Right.
He can do it on third down. I mean, look at what Baron Browning does. Like, he can play that role. I wouldn't do it on first and second down. Then that's when you have Curry in there. But I think you can do it on third down.
Well, and if I were,
and then and you can drop him back too. You can do so much with him in that role.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, again, he can cover a running back. A guy who's got versatility there. But again, like, if I'm advising CJ, like, if we have to coerce him into this, like, man, just look at where the money is. Like, watch where the money's going.
It's not off ball linebackers, I'll tell you that.
No, exactly. go get into the mix. Again, Michael Parsons made that transition pretty smoothly.
Which is funny because he was gonna play defensive end at Ohio State.
Yep. And then he played linebacker. Yeah.
And then Urban got mad that he tweeted that JT stunk, which JT did kind of stink. So
I saw him at game day that day he was there against Oklahoma.
And he still rides with the guys. Like,
he tweets like he went to Ohio State. Like, I don't see any Penn State shit on his feed. It's the funniest thing. I don't know if he changes our championship fortunes, because our defenses were already quite good those years until 2018. And our offenses were just kind of in the shitter, but it would have been nice to have him as a Buckeye.
Could you imagine a hypothetical 2018 D line of some combination of Chase Young, Draymond Jones, Nick Bosa, and Micah Parsons? Are you shitting me? Those first three are already unreal. Add in a freak athlete. I mean, freak person as well, but, you know, Google it, kids.
he's reformed, I think. Who knows?
Maybe there's a reason he doesn't tweet about Penn State.
I think he's been required by lawyers to not mention his time at Penn State. That's all we'll say on the matter.
Yeah, you can dig deeper into that stuff if you want. We got off track.
as we want to do.
Man, I this was going to be a quicker one. I think, like, to me, the defensive line's lack of pass rush is the single most alarming thing on the team right now. Like, I can't, like, I'm pending on the other stuff. Like I was freaking out, like, it's Jover after Saturday. And I've taken a step back from that. And there's not really much work sense in freaking out about it, because even though we don't think Notre Dame is great, we're still going to see, it's still going to give us a much better idea of how good this team is in 2 weeks. So there's not really much of a point in just, like,
And theoretically, it should be like a pretty big game in terms of college football, unless, well, we have to factor in that I guess every major publication for the rest of the year is going to be in Boulder, Colorado. Even when they're away, they're just going to be setting
camping
up
camp out there.
That is a crazy weekend, though, if you think about it. Colorado, Oregon, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Florida State, Clemson. Like, that's the biggest – that's a big football is here weekend right there.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that'll be a good one.
Better for it.
I think that'll be a good one.
What I'm thinking about is, you know, first I'll make a note and it'll probably change, but as of right now, Ohio State's a 2.5-point road favorite against Notre Dame. And you may think to yourself, well, how could it only be 2.5? I mean, it's going to be a 6-9, maybe 7-8, you know, if we move down or they move up or whatever. But, you know, gambling brain here is telling me that's a better spot to be in than if it were like 6.5. Because 6.5 to 7 is where you see like, oh, you know, like that was the spread of the Michigan game 2 years ago. And I think that was similar to what it was last year. Like, you know,
yeah we were
Vegas
touched.
Doesn't know all.
Dude,
things,
we got up to, like, we got up to like, no, because of the Blake Corum injury, we got up to like 9 points before kickoff last year. Which should be pretty comfortable. And it like coming out of the gate, you're like, all right, yeah, we got this. And then obviously they shit the bed. Like, we don't need to go down this road again, but like 21-22 Michigan games are very different. Process, not in outcome. But like 2021, they just got their ass kicked. 2022, they were the better. It should have been a blowout at halftime. And then the wheels came off because everyone was like clenching their asses like tighter than they've ever been clenched.
The way I see it, I mean, I know, you know, Vegas likes to trap people. You know, they're going to do it, get it how they can, which great, good for them. But a 2.5-point game is like, you know, it's even, but there's clearly a favorite. Because, you know, if it were really that close, they'd make it like a pick 'em or whatever. And
yeah, or like,
you know,
a
I think I'm just going to – right. I'm just going to rely on the team with the better athletes. Like, it's – you know, say what you want about coaching staffs. I don't think Marcus Freeman's great and Ryan Day is obviously, you know, I'm not his biggest fan. But I'm just – like, if you're looking at that game from a gambling perspective, one team has Marvin Harrison Jr. and the other doesn't. Now, well, Joe Alt and the boys are a great O-line, but, you know, like, the way I look at it, if Ohio State can get at least marginally better in something every week, I think even though the score was boring and, you know, they had starters playing in the fourth against Youngstown State, I think it was a better performance than Indiana. So if they can put together a better performance against Western Kentucky, you know, maybe the O-line looks a little better, maybe the D-lines get more pressure. You know, maybe everything will be, you know, table set for Notre Dame, where you do get people that are like, you know, Notre Dame may win this game, and I don't know if game day is going to be there or whatever. But I feel like the last couple of years when Ohio State's been in a big game, it's been almost consensus that they are going to win, which, again, not something you necessarily want. Like, I kind of hope that Ohio State would be the underdog in this game. I know Urban Meyer's not there, but when was the last time they were an underdog? Georgia? Before that, what was it?
Probably Clemson 2020, which of course they blew the doors off.
Yeah, we love an underdog Ohio State.
I hate this. It's so I hate when they are the underdog. I hate the fact that they have to be the underdog to play their best for some reason. Yeah. It drives me absolutely insane. You should relish in being the favorite. You should go out and kick their ass and take their hope. I agree with everything you're saying. I don't have much else if you guys want to wrap it up.
I think that's it. We'll probably record again next week, and, you know, in preparation for the Notre Dame game, and get more of our thoughts on tape. But other than that, I think we're good, and go Bucks.
Be on the lookout for a Carnell Tate touchdown this week. I'm feeling good.
Oh yeah.
Feeling good.
The one thing I forgot to say, and this is how I've been thinking about it all off season, Notre Dame's best wide receiver last year is now a backup cornerback at Ohio State. So if they beat us with that clear, that's not me like twisting the facts. That's like reality. If that happens, if they beat us, we're going to have a serious talk, the 18th serious talk about Ryan Day. So
Ryan Day's not making a home that night. I will walk him in the woody, man.
On that note, go Bucks, and we'll see y'all soon.
Peace.